Is although I'm sponsored by Nash, if you look at my gear, not everything is by Nash. So if you see somebody here who is either corded up, Nashed up, foxed up, and use nothing bar them, if you work for a firm, as in are employed and get a salary for that firm, that's all, you know, that's really good because you ain't got a choice, have you? Because you know that's what you have to do. But somebody who's a consultant like me, you know, Kevin's brilliant. He allows me to use what I want to use, and a lot of what I use is his gear. Some of what I use isn't his gear because he doesn't do that. So what I use is what I am confident in. So it's not all Nash, and it's some, a little bit of Fox, a little bit of Gardner. So if you see me using something, it's because I think it's the best for me at the time I'm using. And it really goes back to everything. I mean, Matt, the majority of people here today have probably got more up-to-date and better gear than me. I have no idea how old my rods are, those Nash NRD rods. They must be, what, 6 years, 7 years old, maybe even older. But I'm comfortable with them because they're an extension of my arm. You know, when I'm casting, I don't think of it as a fishing rod. It's just part of my body. The reel, again, it's just something that is the right size for my hand. That's Fox FX11. It's whatever you're comfortable with. And, you know, there's some gear on here that is miles better than mine, you know, more expensive, but it's whatever you're comfortable with. So what I'm using really is what I'm comfortable with. And some of it will be useful to you and some of it won't. Anybody any idea what that main line is?
Looks like that extrusion we use.
It's Fox Fluorocarbon Illusion. It's the fluorocarbon. Now, I don't know how many of you have used fluorocarbon, how many of you haven't. Up to about 100 yards, I always use fluorocarbon. And anybody, and people straight away go, oh, fluorocarbon doesn't cast, it's crinkly, it's bad. Believe you me, if that was right, I wouldn't be using it. The thing about fluorocarbon, it's like braid. Once you've used fluorocarbon, you will never go backwards. You'll never go back to mono. With fluorocarbon, when you cast out, there is little stretch, if any, and you can feel everything when you wind it in. The thing about mono is, I don't care how good you are, when you cast out, it's like casting an elastic back. You cannot feel the bottom at 100 yards with mono compared to fluorocarbon. It is a massive advantage. If I'm fishing in very, very thick weed, and if I'm fishing at long range, I'll use monofilament. But if I'm fishing anywhere from 0 to certainly 80, 90 yards, and there's not loads of really heavy snags and weed, I only use fluorocarbon. I cannot feel the bottom. And you take these away and cast out with this. as I'll leave you the rod to do, and then you fish your own rods. This is unbelievable. You feel everything, every single thing. Now, I'm not saying that's a massive advantage, but it's quite a lot of an advantage when you cast out and you can feel the bottom. You can feel what the weed is. You can feel when it's choddy, when it's thick weed. Monofilament, you use those for two sessions, I guarantee none of you will go back to mono. It is that good. I started off with stuff like X-Line. The new fluorocarbons are nothing like the old fluorocarbons. The old fluorocarbons were very wiry. I mean, that's been on probably 6 months, and that is just unbelievable when you feel it. I pass this round. It's so soft.
What pound is it, Jules?
That's £16. The one thing is, when you play your first fish, you will absolutely babble yourself because you feel every single time
my
that fish goes. It's like but if you try to pull the reds off, you will pull the hook out of the fish. But if you just play fish normally, you'll not pull hooks out of the fish. It's just using a bit of common sense. So the advantages of this are brilliant. Thing with a fluorocarbon as well, it's only as good as the way you use it. So fluorocarbon always loads better warm. So line in the winter is never as good as it is in the summer. In the summer, line is warm and it spools off better. So when I load my fluorocarbon up, there's no point soaking it because it can't take water. You can soak it for 10 days, nothing will ever happen. It cannot absorb water in. But if you load it in warm water, it actually loads on your spool really, really beautiful. And look at that, I have no problem with that at all. That's probably a good 6 months old. I never have any problem at all. Fluorocarbon, I don't use because it's invisible, because that's... If I was a matchman fishing with line hanging down like that, I might want the line to be pretty invisible, for want of a better word. But the majority of that line is laid on the bottom. The reason I like fluorocarbon is, number one, it sinks like a stone. So when you're casting out in a crosswind, it just goes like that. It almost is like somebody dropping a line like that. You cast out in mono, and I've watched it, you get these lovely great bows in your line, and you're trying to tighten up. You cast with that, even with a 2 ounce lead, and your line just goes in a straight line. There's none of this big bows in the line, mending your line. It just goes out like that. It just literally cuts through the water. So you get a better line lay. You can feel the bottom straight away. It sinks like a stone as well. So, it's not mid-water. It's the higher your line is of water, the water, it gets more of a bow in the line. Most monos, you can cast out 90 yards. And Rob Hughes has showed this. You can pick the lead up and say, strike. You can't even feel it. There's nothing happening there. So if you imagine, if you can't strike the hook home at 90 yards, what makes you think you can feel the bottom at 90 yards? You can't. All you're feeling is an elastic band. With that, I can feel the bottom, or as much of the bottom as I need to do. So for fluorocarbon, the indication's better as well. You're getting, you can actually get, you get the movement of the line. It's so good. Forget these little indicators. Well, I've seen videos where people show fluorocarbon being used at 100 yards with little bobbins that are hanging like that. That fluorocarbon is so heavy on the bottom. That fish can kite all the way around, because it's so heavy, it's laid along the bottom. That little bobbin was sat there, and you'll come back the next day and you've got to run. It's somewhere over there. So the thing with fluorocarbon is, if you're fishing at anything over any decent range, you need to have your rods pointed at where your end tackle is, and you need to fish heavy bobbins or heavy-ish bobbins with your rod tips low, and you'll get better indication. So it's a matter of whatever suits you, but I use that for probably 90% of my fishing. If I'm fishing in heavy weed, or if I'm fishing at extreme range, then I'll use monofilament. But that stuff, and again, I'll give you the rod to try out, it's absolutely fantastic stuff. That's £16. And people say, oh yeah, but I've had fluorocarbon break on me. Honestly, I've never had fluorocarbon break.
Say that was the best out there at the moment.
I've used X-Line.
I've used that Daiwa Fluorite stuff, and it was awful.
I've got loose on two of my rods, and I
don't
love
like
that
it.
P-Line. I've got two, the P-Line for the trucking rods, and the other two rods.
Tigerline. I think Tigerline's very good. Tigerline's
same stuff. What he's using.
But honestly, when this is finished, I'll pass you my rod, and you feel it. That is absolutely unbelievable. A thing as well about, that's 6 months old.
It's a bit
is that?
Noisy coming off the rail, I think.
Yeah,
80 yards is fine.
Yeah, anything up to 100 yards. Let's be honest, this is quite a big water. Most people don't fish 17 acres of water. Most people should never fish beyond 80 yards, having watched them fish. up to 80 yards, nothing comes close to him. Honestly, nothing comes close to him. That is what I would advise. Another thing as well, it doesn't matter how invisible your line is, because when it's been in the water, all that happens is what I call the washing line effect. Suspended silt, bits of weed, hangs itself on it. So this lovely thin line all of a sudden gets all this crap on it, and it stands out like a washing line. So one thing I do whenever I wind in, every time I've chucked out, is I just put my finger in there like that and just wind, and it gets rid of all the crap off your line. So it's, you know, so it's not three times as thick. So when people tell me that their line is 0.17 millimetres, when it's been out there about 6 hours, it's 0.3 millimetres.
Would you still fish that over 100 yards, like if you were bait boat, for example?
Over, yeah.
If you've got a bait boat.
Is it just 100 yards because you can't cast?
It's only because over 100 yards. Over 100 yards, it's difficult to cast over 100 yards.
You could tow if you like.
Absolutely, yeah.
If you rose it,
absolutely.
You'd be happy.
All the time, all the time. And that, honestly, that's the honest truth of what I use. Again, this is that's what I use as a leader as well. Again, that's all I've used as an anti-tangle leader. That's the Nash diffusion. And again, first time I saw those, I said to myself, "Oh, that'd be all right if you fish over green." Has anybody ever used these? They are absolutely unbelievable. I'm not kidding you. And again, take this down to the water edge. You put that in the edge, and I say to people, right. And once they see them, they never change. You put that in the edge, and they'll say, you know where that's gone? You watch it in the edge, watch it, and they watch it. Say, now turn your back, now look again. You won't see it. All you will see is that swivel, and I guarantee. Because it's called diffusion, and what it does is it's like a chameleon effect. Whatever the bottom is, it almost absorbs the colour of the bottom. And you, honestly, the only thing you will see is the knot at one end, and you'll see that there. You will not see that. Now, I'm not saying that carp see anti-tangle tubing and go, oh, carp angler, I'm not going to pick the lead up. But I have seen carp come up against things which they see as unnatural. And something that's, you know, that long and black lifting off an area that they may be caught on, you see them getting quite... It's like floater fishing is the best way to see this. If you are floater fishing and you have not got the fish feeding strongly, once you chuck out a floater controller, they'll panic and absolutely crap themselves. But if you overcast, get the fish feeding like mad and wind it in, they won't panic. Carp are always aware that they're being fished for. I think carp, that's always, it's like a good looking bird, she always knows when she's been chatted up. You might think she thinks you're the best thing since sliced bread. She will know she's been chatted up for the end result. The better looking you are, the more that she'll put that to one side and go, she loves me, he loves me. If you're rich, that beautiful girl, even though you might be obese, if you've got money and she shows attention to you, you'll go, she loves me. No, she loves your money, guys. So in relation to this...
What you're saying is Rosie is like the fit bird in the club.
The less that you can make the carp panic about your end tackle, the easier it is. So if they're on edge when they come into your swim, there is less chance they're going to make a mistake with a hook bait. So a big tight line through your swim, a black length of tubing along the bottom. I'm not saying they'll go, oh, that's a carp angler, bugger off. But I tell you what, it ain't going to improve your chances. Whereas that stuff just completely, completely disappears. Lead clips. It's whatever you're confident in. I mean, that's a Nashy one. That's the new diffusion one. I use lead clips for probably 90% of my fishing. The only time I use a bomb on the end of the line or helicopter, whatever you want, is for extreme range. If the bomb's going like that and your hook length is just hanging down there, that'll go a lot longer than a bomb that's going there with a hook length rotating on the law of physics. But for, again, I would advise most people, every angler I know from either crap to brilliant is better at 80 yards than he is at 120 yards because he's more accurate. Even anglers who can cast a long, long way, they are better at 80 yards than they are at 100 yards. They're better at 100 yards than they are at 120 yards. Number of people who tell me they can use a throwing stick, and you watch them and then go stand sideways on the pond, those baits are all over the place. That's all right for pre-baiting, but it's not great if you're using those baits. So anything that's a bit of an advantage. So up to about 80-90 yards, certainly up to 100 yards, I will always use a bomb on the end of the line. That's a 2 ounce lead, right? That's 2 ounce lead. That's for the majority of situations I fish 2 ounces. If I can't get the range, I'll go to 2.5 ounces. If I can't get the range, I'll go to 3 ounces. The reason with 2 ounces, and this is experience, I know that a 2 ounce lead up to about 80 yards, I can feel the bottom beautifully. If it's a lot lighter, no matter what it hits the bottom, I can't feel anything. If it's too heavy, if you're fishing 3.5 ounce of lead, believe you me, it will hit the bottom, whether you're fishing over chod or whatever. So for me, my starting point is 2 to 2.5 ounces, because I know I can get the distance at most waters I fish, I can actually feel the bottom as well. So it's just my personal preference.
Do you find that a 2 ounce lead, like if you do get a feel on the bottom, if you do hit the bottom, it's not going to, like a 4 ounce lead, it goes straight through the weed. Yeah. Sometimes it gives you false
impression.
That's actually what I have on a first but a 4 ounce lead's like, oh, and
if you're really weedy, like maybe a 1 ounce lead, like a 1 ounce lead and fluorocarbon, if that hits the bottom, it's fishable.
It's fishable, I just find for me, 2 to 2.5 ounces is absolutely perfect. Unless I've got headwind and I might need to go a bit, but I will use the lightest lead. Now, in the olden days, people used to use very heavy leads because hooks were blunt. Quite frankly, in the olden days, hooks were blunt compared to what we got. You used to use a Leon Door or O'Shaughnessy 34021s.
Jack Hewins.
Jack Hewins. They were great hooks until you looked at them with a magnifying glass and they were like, how do we ever hook a fish? Well, you hook a fish because the bigger lead you have, the more chance it can of pulling that hook home. Nowadays, believe you me, you do not need 4 ounces of lead to hook a carp, because the hooks you're using are so sharp, the bottom has got silt on it, and even though that's 2 ounces, once that drops in the silt and gets stuff over, that becomes 3 ounces or more. It becomes a fixed point. Your hook length has got no stretch in it, your fluorocarbon's got no stretch in it, and that all drags a hook up.
You'd still be happy using like a size 4 with a lightweight?
Yeah, of course I would. I'd find that hook down. You know, I can pick a size 4 up that I've had sharpened, and I don't need a lead to pull that up. Oh, I'll prick myself. As soon as they move, any resistance, that which is laid on the weed on the bottom, that will just drag the hook out. That will drag the hook out. And all this stuff about, I watched a carp bouncing the hook, you know.
Fluorocarbon's got to help with that as well, surely, with that, because
the weight of fluorocarbon, just absolutely.
You can use an even lighter lead, I guess.
Yeah, you could use
that indication, because there's no stretch.
There's no stretch, you get absolutely superb.
And it just hooks the bottom as well. Like just when you reel in normal line, you reel in the fluorocarbon, you pick one up over the other, and it's like, it feels like you're in weed, even when you know you're on a clear spot.
Pick up a spool of 600 metres of Fox Illusion and feel how heavy it is. Pick up a spool of 1,000 yards of any monofilament, heavier. Just feels like the light and the weight of that will set the hook. You do not need to use 4 ounces of lead to set a modern day hook with a proper hook setup. I always use a lead clip so that the lead will come off if it goes into weed. If you are losing the lead every single time when there's no weed out there, you are daft, because you are. Well, number one, I don't know whether it poisons the water or not. I don't think it does, but I don't know enough about it to say. But I want to drop that lead if there's weed out there, because every single time, if you are playing a fish without a lead on it, you have got a direct line of pull. In the olden days, there was no such thing as you had got lead clips that came off, and what would happen is, You'd get a fish and it'll go like mad, and all that happen is that would come off, the fish would be somewhere over there, and your leg would be over there, and you would be playing this fish that you would be convinced is in line with that tree, and you'd be giving it stuff, and all of a sudden this thing would boil over there, and you think, what the hell was that? Was that another fish jumping? It wasn't, because what had happened, that fish had gone like that. That leg clip with that lead had got stuck in the weed, and that would go and go and go until you got a tight line on it. Somewhere out there is that fish, and you are pulling at a big ball of weed. You have got no pressure on that fish down there. The thing about having a lead clip which is attached to your swivel is that when the fish goes, all the pressure is on the lead clip, and all that can happen is that cannot pull out. So all that happens is, as soon as there's any pressure on that lead clip, all that happens is the lead comes off like that, and you are in a direct line of pull. And wherever your fish is, if your fish is directly in line with your hook length like that, you are going to land it. And you'd be amazed how many times you get a run, weed, and then It's up on the surface. For some reason, once that lead's off, they come to the surface. It's like playing fish on a floater setup is far easier than playing a fish with a 4 ounce lead bouncing around. 4 ounce leads bouncing around that haven't dropped off are going to bump that hook off if you are not looking.
They always hit the surface.
They always come top. Yeah. So I don't
which
care.
Makes life easy. Yeah. It's the snags are down there. Yeah.
I don't care what lead clip you have, as long as it is fixed into the swivel like that, it is far more safe than a lead which is attached. Yes, it's not going to come off. But believe you me, even if you cracked off, right, if you crack off, the worst thing that you can do is crack off and it's still attached to it. But if a fish picks that up and goes round, the lead's going to drop off anyway. So that to me is far, the only way to have a totally safe is not to go fishing. If you are that worried about fish safety, do not cast out. Because every time you put a hook in a fish, you are in effect putting some pressure and some stress on that fish. You just don't go fishing. Don't walk across the grass because you're killing loads of ants. We have to do what we think is best, and I honestly think that any lead clip that is affixed, and the older, I mean, I just use the Nash ones because I'm comfortable with those, but I think Corda do ones, Fox do ones, Avid, and I just have them so they drop the lead. So that is literally what I call the first bit of the setup, and then we'll come to rigs. The final thing, apart from that setup, which I'll cover when I cover rigs, is the big ring swivel. Now, Nash used to do them, but I think they don't do them anymore, and I think the only people who do those now is Atomic. It's a big ring swivel. Or if you go on eBay, you can get huge, if you look around, I mean, I'm not very good with computers, but if you look round, you will actually find big ring swivels made by Hong Kong or whatever. Probably beach diversity there, sorry. But you can buy maybe 500 for, I don't know, 50 quid or something. But they're absolutely brilliant, because the thing with a big ring swivel is that when you cast out, that allows your hook length to rotate. And if it's rotating, it don't catch on. If your hook length can lay backwards along there, I don't care what rig it is, it can tangle. With that, it's like almost allows your hook length to, it forces your hook length off it, and your hook length will rotate like a helicopter rig. Yeah, and I'll show you how I do this. So that is a massive thing. And also as well, when the lead hits the bottom like that, that big ring swivel allows your hook length to flop over. If you tie it direct to if you took that off and just tied it direct to that, what happens is you end up with a loop. You always end up with a loop. Now, and again, I'm not saying that that loop will scare fish, because a fish will go, oh, that's a loop. Your presentation does not perform as effectively unless it's on a... But the less play that there is, the more chance that the carp moves a little bit and pricks itself. And I'll show you this when I do my rigs. The more play that there is in your rig, the more chance... You see this on the Corda videos. Those carp were not hooking themselves purely and simply because they were not hitting a fulcrum between lead and hook point. And what happens is people get shorter and shorter and shorter. So it's so short that the fish are pricking themselves immediately. Well, that's all right if your fish are going right down on the bait. I can fish a 12-inch hook length and still prick the fish because the hook length is stiff. And that's why the stiff hinge rig works well, because there's less, if a carp can't move before it pricks itself, that allows the hook length to flop straight. Whereas if you tie it direct to the little swivel, it doesn't matter what hook length you, even braid will have a loop in it. And the thing about a loop, it doesn't allow you to have a straight hook length. And also the carp, when it's moving around, can actually, if you've got this lifted up like that, a carp will drag the hook length round with its pectoral fins. And I just think that carp, I'm not saying the carp will go, that's hook length, I think it makes the carp a little bit more wary. I'm not saying but it's another percentage, isn't it? It's another, and I talked to him about this to one of the guys on here, it's another percentage. The guy who cuts the percentages down, somebody fishing at 78% is better than somebody fishing at 77% on the law of averages eventually. So it's just a little edge that I use.
Use that range, Jules?
Use that range.
No anti-tangle sleeve or anything?
No, don't use an anti-tangle sleeve ever. That's that never ever tangles.
Straight onto that, yeah.
Straight onto that. I'll show you.
I always use a ring swivel, but I've never used one that big.
No,
I like it.
Yeah.
But you again, tangle sleeves, nothing.
No, I never use any
tangle sleeves. No.
Never use anti.
I use a normal rubber.
It will always send it, spin it, and as soon as it hits the bottom, it flops over. It will never loop.
I use a hook link. I put the hook link on separate. So I led around. Delay,
yeah, and then put on. Hook link, yeah, but with that, you couldn't do that, could you? You'd have to tie it on, wouldn't you? Afterwards?
No, no. I use one of those with a hook link clip.
You can, yeah.
I
can tie it with a stick, so I thread the stick on and then on a hook link clip. But
see, the thing is, people use quick links when they're getting one bite a day, and I think. Now, the quick link, if you are fishing on Brasenose or Drayton for getting fish after fish, I can understand, but there's guys fishing quick links when they are only recasting once a day, and I'm thinking, why, other than watching a Corda video where somebody says use a quick link, why are you using a quick link swivel? Because, and this is what, this is the best bit of advice Andy Little ever gave me, he says, when you go fishing, it doesn't matter if you make the wrong decision. What is vitally important is that you think about every single thing you do. So, I am using this because, I'm using that because, I'm using that, I'm using that. Doesn't matter whether you get it wrong, but if you are just using it because I saw Julian, Dave Lane, Andy Little use it, and I've no idea why, but I'm just bunging it out, that's crap. If you do something and you think you know why you're doing it and you're wrong, you're halfway there, because eventually you'll go, that works, actually it doesn't work, but I know if I change it. If you only do stuff because you've copied it and don't understand the point behind it, you'll never get there. It's like teaching somebody to do things unless they understand the whole point of it. It's like teaching somebody French. If you just translate word for word, you will be able to say sentences, but when somebody starts speaking to you in French, you'll go, I have not got a clue what he's saying because I don't understand the principle. So whatever you do in fishing, what is important is you try and understand why you are using every bit of the equation. Even if you got that wrong, you're thinking about it. So that's the most important. Just copying and not understanding is pointless. But doing things and even getting them wrong, as long as you've got an idea why, because you can always move on. Not thinking is the biggest problem that most people have got. Because I go, why are you doing that? And he'll go, I don't know. Why are you fishing a rod pod with your lines like that when you've got your rods one there? Why are you using a rod pod? I don't know really, that's all I've got. Wouldn't it be better if you actually fish your rods? So it's just that little bit of thought process that makes a massive difference between the guy who was successful and the guy who was less successful. Rig-wise, I am probably the most boring angler in the world when it comes to rigs. I would say that since 2007, when I first started carp fishing in the early 80s, most of my fishing was on waters which were weedy. And the thing is, down south, every water was clear. It was gravel pits, it was rock hard. Up north, every water was full of weed. So down south, everybody fished on the bottom with bottom baits. My part of the world, if you fished a bottom bait in the weed, you weren't even getting a pickup. You were not getting pickups. And so when I talked about pop-ups, most people would say, God, he's a bit behind the times, pop-ups. And people think pop-ups are like that. If you fish a pop-up like that, I am sure that is a bit obvious off the bottom. But it's, you've got to think about where you're fishing. It don't matter what somebody else says. You go back 10 years to what Cord and a lot of well-known anglers were writing about. They were saying, guys who fish pop-ups, they're a little bit daft, they don't know what they're talking about, they spook the carp, I use bottom baits, wafters, because they were fishing waters which were clear and they could get away with doing that. You notice what those guys are talking about now, they're all talking about multi-rigs, chod rigs, because the waters that they were fishing were clear are now full of weed. You cast your bottom bait in there, mate, I don't care what your name is on the end of that, you ain't getting a bite, because that hook is snarled up with weed, and unless that carp drags that hook into its mouth, you ain't getting a pickup, you ain't landing a fish. So since probably mid 80s, I would say that 90% of my fish since the 80s have been caught on pop-ups, because 90% of my fish have been caught over weed. I wish it was nice clear bottoms and clay, because it would be great to tie bottom baits and just fish them straight on the bottom, but that's not the kind of water I'm fishing. And I would say, since 2006, I was never really super happy with the pop-up rigs I used. And in 2007, Mike Kavanagh showed me a rig called the Multi-Rig. And The reason why I actually liked it is that I didn't have to tie a separate hair for a change, and it allowed me to fish. I don't know how many of you. I'll show you how to tie the multi-rig up, and it allowed me to fish a loop and put a bait screw or whatever. So it was all. I didn't have to worry about tying a separate dental floss hair. And the rig that you see there is the same concept as 2007, but that's 8 years further on. So that's the development in 8 years further on. And usually I do take the hook protector on. Otherwise, that's a real safe rig. You'll get lots of bites and you'll get no landing. That's the best thing for fish care ever. You will never cause any damage to a carp's mouth with that ever. And you, I tell you what, you can wind that back in the morning, use it the next day. That's a great Scottish rig. Yeah, that's a great Scottish rig that you will never ever waste a hook in your life.
Yeah, good luck that tape, mate.
So, but from 2007 till now, honestly, I would say 90 to 95% of the thousands of carp I have caught have been on the multi-rig. Now, we're talking deep waters, shallow waters, winter, summer, long range, short range, big fish, small fish, tench, bream, carp. If that rig was not a good rig, believe you me, it would have dried up. If you pick up the papers now and look at how many people are talking about the multi-rig, famous anglers, it catches so many fish. And it's been catching for years, so that is virtually the only presentation that I use for my carp fishing nowadays. I'm going to show you how to tie it, but just so that people haven't got sort of some misunderstanding about a pop-up and things like that. The thing with pop-ups is that people imagine that you're fishing them silly amounts off the floor when you're really not. For the majority of my fishing, I'm not bothered about the bait being popped up, but I want my hook point off the bottom. I see I am tight. Every time I've used one of these, I put it back in here.
Use like an
eye on it. I'll go through exactly everything. Right, the thing about that is on there, when you look at that on there, that might appear quite obvious, but I tell you what, if you go and drop that in the edge there where there's all weed, that will sit like that. And the thing about a pop-up is no matter how many times that carp pisses about with that, a roach pisses about, that hook point is always fishing. So that's what I call my always fishing rig. You cast out. The bottom of the lake is not like that. The only way the bottom of the lake is like that is in rig books, because in rig books it's always clear, the carp always comes in the direction of the hook, and it never ever tangles, right? But if you imagine that on the bottom, if that was a bottom bait, any amount of weed will cover your hook point, especially when roach and bream and chub are pissed about with it. That gets weed on it. That carp cannot hook itself on that. Because it gets, you've seen, how many of you wound in your hooks and they're covered in that crap? You imagine, if that's on the bottom, that carp cannot drag that. You can sharpen that hook up till it's as sharp as anything. If that's got weed around it, it's not that thin, it's just a waste of time. So the reason why I use a pop-up, and that is popped up, is so that the hook point is always exposed. So that is always fishing. So from the second that goes in the water, if a bream pisses about with that, unless that bream hooks itself, that hook is always, always fishing. And if you drop that in the edge, that, believe you me, if you fish that pop-up that far off the bottom, that might look quite obvious and a carp may go, whoa. But if you fish that as I fish it like that, if you think about a carp, even the ones that we've seen caught today, they don't go along like that and go, wow, that's 5 millimetres off the bottom and not having that. That carp don't know that's on the bottom in the normal, even out here, this isn't a particularly weedy water. That carp has got no clue that is not on the bottom. Think about a carp shape. It's not an eel that goes like that. It don't go on its side. Even a 15 pounder is a big old fish. It can't swim with its eye on the side like that and see that it's not on the bottom. It's just a fallacy. A lot of the stuff you read about works only in rig books. So if I'm writing a rig book, I have got to write about a million and one rigs and stuff like that and come up with all sorts. And you'll think, wow, this guy knows his rigs. You might go away and think, Jesus, that guy only knows one rig. I don't care that you might think I'm a bit, you know, behind the times. I know that works. And so if any of you go away today and think, I could do just what he can do, That's great, because I don't want you to go ahead and think, oh, it's ahead of me. You might think, oh, it's got one or two edges on me, but I can duplicate what he does. That's all I want you to do. I don't want you to go ahead and think, he blew my mind, because there's nothing I've told you today that none of you can't do. Everything I do, you can do. And that's the great thing about carp fishing. I can give you Valentino Rossi's motorbike. You ain't going to do a 117 lap. You're probably going to do a 230 lap if you don't fall off. But I tell you what, if you go here, put yourself in a swim where the carp are and cast that out, which you can all do because you can cast, that carp doesn't know if it's Julian Cundiff, Dave Lane, Jamie Cossack or Don Smith on the end of that. That's a great, carp fishing is a great leveller. Yeah. There's no other sport. I can give you, you know, I can give you Agassi's bloody tennis bat. I can give you Graham Gooch's bloody cricket bat. I can give you, you know, David Beckham's football boots. You ain't going to do what he does, but in carp fishing, it's the greatest level ever, because you can have, there's nothing there that you can't do. There's no real edges in carp fishing. There's nothing that none of you can't do that I can do. So, you know, if you go away from the carp cast today and think, God, I can just, he might have caught thousands of carp, but he don't really do anything special. That's great, because that's what I want you to do. I want you to think that. I don't want you to think, oh God, he's a bit ahead of me and I'd never be like that, because that's just bull. Any pros who try and give you the impression that they're a little bit better than you are very boring. It's, you know, they are not a little bit, they've got more experience than you and that's it, but the rest of it you can all duplicate. So this is the rig that I catch most of the carp on. And I'll sit on here and tie it up for you. It's the multi-rig, and it is really, really, really simple to tie. Right, whatever I use, it does not mean... you can all gather around if you want to be steady. It does not mean that you have to do exactly the same. So the first thing is the hook design. I use the Fang Twister. It doesn't matter what hook you want to do. I'm just happy with these. Some people use the Fang X, some people use the Fox, whatever. All that matters is that it works for you. Now, what I would say to everybody is, unless you are confident in the rig that you've got, to me, if I wasn't confident, the first thing I'd do is copy exactly the bloke that was doing it, as long as he understood why he was doing it. And then after that, I might think, do you know what? I like that hook, but I might change it to such and such because I like how that sits up. I know he uses that hook length, but I prefer that hook length. That's great. Always start with a starting point and vary. So whatever you see me use, I didn't start off with it like this. I started off with it. In fact, I would imagine that every single bit I'm using is different from what I originally started off with. But by now, you are seeing probably 8 years of evolution in that. So that's probably 8 years on. Every single thing in there is different to what I started off with. But it's the same basic principle. It's just that I've now found...
Push up lower down now? Or?
No, that's... I'll show you exactly what I do. So the hook thing... The thing is, I use what is called a Fang Twister. Do you need to sharpen them? Well, anybody who... I mean, that is a sharp hook. If you sharpen them, they're even sharper. The one thing about sharpening hooks, if you've got any bream, tench, roach or chub in your water, it is a chuffing nightmare, because you will find all of a sudden you are getting a lot more bream, because they will mouth your baits and that hook will prick them. That will prick them straight away. Anything like that. I mean, I've not even tried to prick. There's no lead on there and that pricked myself straight away. If you have got a lot of nuisance fish in your water and you start sharpening your hooks, you better get used to no sleep, because you are going to get bream after bream that mouth your bait and prick themselves. So the only time I use sharper ducks is if I'm fishing a water without nuisance fish, because otherwise it will drive you mad. I mean, that hook is sharp enough to hook 90% or 100% of the fish you hook. It doesn't matter what hook length you use, what hook you use, but that's the favourite one. Hook lengths, again, it's whatever you're confident in. The hook length is the bit that hooks the fish against the hook and the lead. I've used various hook lengths. You've got your Nash ones, you've got your Fox ones, you've got ESP striptease. It's whatever you're confident in. I like the Nash wee green one. It doesn't really matter. It's whatever you're confident in.
Is it supple braid?
No, it's a coated braid.
But a supple coated, not like a really stiff.
The only one that is super stiff, I think, is it the Fox? Give me a clue on this.
Camo Tech stiff.
That no, is so stiff. It is too stiff. For ideally you want a hook length that is about like that. If it's too stiff, if it hits anything, it tends to sit off the bottom like that. If it is too soft, it tends to have too much of a loop in it. So what I want is a hook length that is supple enough that it doesn't stand up like that, but it just sits down perfectly. So for me, the two that hook nearly pricked myself on that. The two that I use are either the ESP Striptease in brown or the Nash Combi in green. It's whatever you're confident in. You're not trying to sell you this. So it's always a coated braid. But the first thing you do is just tie a bog standard, I don't even know what that's called.
Overhand knot,
yeah, that's or right. Overhand knot, okay. Bog standard overhand knot. And then, again, I'll say, does anybody not know to tie a bog standard overhand knot? It is absolutely dead simple. It just simply is. All you're doing is forming a loop and just tying a knot like that and through itself.
Just a hair knot, isn't it?
It's a hair knot. That's what I was going to call it, a hair knot. Okay? Now, the thing with... Yeah, it's dead easy. The thing with that is, ideally, the knot needs to be just big enough to go over the top of that. The bigger the loop is, the higher your hook will naturally be off the bottom. If it's too small, you won't get it over that anyway. When you've tied enough, you could do it second nature without thinking. But the first time you tie it, you will inevitably tie it too bigger a loop or too small a loop. The more... Exactly, yeah. So a good idea is when you've tied the loop, just look at the loop and say, will that go over the top? Yes, it will. If it won't go over the top, you're never going to get anywhere. So you've tied your loop, just get a pair of forceps, and all you're doing is just bedding your loop in. Don't pull it tight, just bed it. That's it. That's it. You do not need to... If you pull it rigid tight, you will break that and it'll, what I call, flop over. That, because of the way it is, can only ever tighten up on itself. It can never undo itself. Get a pair of scissors and trim it off. You do not need to super glue that, because all that can do ever is tighten up on itself. This is a little thing I came up with myself. I've seen it now. Somehow you've got to push that through the eye of your hook. Now, when I first started doing this, it was absolutely... You were trying to push that through there, and it used to drive me mad. And so I ended up using a hook with a bigger eye, but then it didn't stay. And so I just came up with this very, very basic, simple idea, which is so, so simple, it's just crazy. All you're doing is you are using a bit of dental floss. The dental floss goes through there like that. And you want that, flick it, that goes through there, just like that. Okay, pull it through. That is such a... I should have... If I was Cord, I could paint on that. Darlene, yeah. That is such a simple... You imagine... I have spent afternoons trying to do six hooks, and you end up... Oh, God, I'll use a size 3 hook, and then it'll go through. But that is such a simple thing to do. Right, the next thing you need to do, and it's called the percentages game, is make sure that is not looped. Because if you get a twist in that and it doesn't go over, it won't work properly. Right, what do you want to mount your hook bait on? I always mount my hook bait on what I call, I think they're called threaded bait rings or whatever you want to call them.
It's, bait screws.
Bait screws, threaded bait screws, whatever you want to call them. I used to use, originally, a bog standard bait screw, which is like that. There's nothing wrong with those. But what I found is, the more angles that you can get in your rig, the more it allows that fish to trip itself up. So what I prefer is the bait screws with the extra little ring on it. I think King of the Pond do them, Nash do them, Tasker do them. Maybe other people do them. You get that bait screw, and all you're doing is you're putting that through there like that, okay? So we've got there like that, okay? What is important now is to put that over there without a twist in it. That needs to go in a straight line over the top. Now this is, that's perfect. That goes straight over the top and on. If that is too small, it won't go over the top, but it's practice. Honestly, the more you practice, the easier it is. When I sit at home, I can do 10 of these in about 10 minutes. So when MotoGP qualifying or F1 qualifying's on, that's what I do, because I can do them almost. That needs to go over the top, right? So it sits like that. And you just pull it down, and I always do it just to where the curve, where it starts to bend. If you imagine the loop you've tied is too big, that will be down there, which means it naturally is more off the bottom. The smaller your loop is, the closer that knot will be to it, which allows you to fish it tight to the bottom. And it's just a matter of practice. Practice makes perfect. The more you practice, I can, when I've done one, I can literally do every one, so that when I put the loop over, it just goes over with a bit of push, and literally that knot will end up like that. So it's so close. I'm going to give this, you know, take it away. So all you need to do is, that is how it should sit like that. Okay, that's how it should sit. Now, some people for some reason don't break the coating, and I think that's absolutely crazy, because I want that coating breaking to fish at 360. So all I do is get my fingertips and break the coating, and I ain't got no nails. You break the coating because what that allows is, if you imagine, that allows that to spin, whatever. A little tip here is, when you've broken the coating, just do that a couple of times. You're undoing the fibres. You're never going to break the fibres. Always use your nails. Never use any of these horrible stripping tools, because that is only as good as every single fibre being there. Once you lose one fibre, it just breaks it. So those horrible, I mean, I've got no nails, but I can strip the right stuff. So that allows that hook link to spin. Whatever way that carp comes, that carp, that can spin into its mouth, okay? So that will always spin like that. So all I do is, when I'm at home, I break it like that. I cut it off. I don't know how long that is. That's whatever. That cut that off. So that's made at home. So I make 10 of those at home. Now, the thing is with this, I'll just show you the variation a bit. The thing is with this, if you imagine you do not sting that hook link, right? When you cast out, let's imagine you've cast out this rig. But just another thing as well, whenever I know that those airball pop-ups take one of those to sink them properly. A lot of people critically balance their baits. The problem with critically balancing baits is that carp are big old pigs, right? And as they're coming towards it, that bait is what it's like trying to grab a ping pong ball in your mouth in the bath. You'll get near it and it'll just bobble away all the time. And it honestly, it does not work. I always I always overshot my pop-up rigs so that it holds it down and it's spinning like that, like an. Not, I don't want it rock solid so it can't lift up, but I want it so that, especially when it gets a bit of silt and crap around it, it is spinning round like that. So when the carp, when it gets near it, isn't bobbling round out of its mouth, but it's enough so it can lift up and then prick down against itself. I know that one of those pop-ups with one of these shots, it will hold it down, not critically balanced, but it will nail it down, but not overshot it. Always put your shot or your putting so that it doesn't go onto the broken bit of the hook length. So put it right at the end of your hook length. I've never had a hook length break there. You can buy it shot on. If you do it on monofilament or fluorocarbon, it crushes it, breaks it. But believe you me, with coated braid, that will never ever break that in a million years. And all that means is that carp, that's got a pivot point. Because in rig books, you will always be the carp. But in reality, That can spin round anywhere. That I'll give these takeaway.
Because you can come in any angle.
It can come in at any angle. It can spin round at any angle and prick itself. Mm-hmm. That is so good. Now you imagine, and I'll show you this, right? If you don't steam that coated braid, right? You cast out, right? Okay. What happens is, as it hits the bottom, your hook link lays like that. Okay. Right. Now I am not saying that a carp will go, that's a hook link, but the problem is that carp can piss about with your hook bait all like that. It's got so much movement until it actually pricks itself there. That's a lot of movement for the carp. Now let's remember, right, that is not a sharpened up, there's no lead on there, and I didn't pull that has pricked itself straight away, that. But that's a lot of movement, that's a lot of pissing about.
You always use a size 5.
I use a bigger hook. When you steam a hook length, and I'll tie this to that in a moment, what it means is when that hits the bottom, that hook length will kick out at full extension like that and sit like that. That carp ain't got much before it pricks itself against that hook length. Now, so what you see is with people who don't have stiff hook lengths, they get shorter and shorter and shorter. The problem with that is sometimes it's so short the carp can't get it in its mouth. That, and I'll tie it up with that, that is absolutely perfect. So that is a steamed hook length. So I always steam my hook lengths at home over a kettle. The problem with steaming at the lakeside is that it's inevitable when you steam up the lakeside. You steam at home with a plastic kettle, you can run them up and down that plastic kettle. And what you need to do when you steam the hook length is, as you're steaming it, rotate that hook length in your fingers so that all the hook length gets steamed. Believe you me, it makes a massive difference if all the sides of the hook length are steamed.
Just like underneath it.
I steam all of it. So I just simply, when I'm at home, with, if I was at home now, imagine that that's not on, I'll take that off. And it's a Yorkshire, it's a Scottish, really. I save up. I'm at home.
Anyone foreigner here?
Yeah, yeah. If I'm at home and I've got my kettle boiling, I literally, and these are why these are great, I hold that with my fingers, the kettle spout is there, and I just turn it round in my fingers like that, and I steam all the hook length. You put it down, and instead of being like that, that hook length will be like that. They sit like that. They are absolutely stiff as anything.
So you never free tie your length as well, you just do like to wherever you're fishing on
that. Yeah, so that literally is how stiff they are. And when you're fishing and tying up, they go super stiff. So that
change the length, do you always have the same length?
I'll show you this in a minute exactly. And remember, that carp has got not got a lot of pissing about with before it pricks itself
against
it. It's
got to move a wee bit then.
It pricks itself, yeah. So as soon as you've tied, I tie 10 of those up, and it doesn't take me very long at all. And then I put them in a rig box. Don't matter what, you know, as long as a rig box is whatever, that's how that goes. I get my. It sits beautifully, believe you me. Okay. Yeah, you got all that. You get all of that, Matt. Cheers, mate. Okay, so this is the end tackle I've got. So this is the end tackle.
For them, lads.
What? No. I didn't pay for that. Yeah, no, I didn't pay for that. Right, so this is the end tackle I use. And again, it's about percentages. For carp fishing, when I talk about length of hook length, all I'm talking about is the bit from the shot to the loop. So that potentially is a 12-inch hook length, but all I'm concerned about is the bit from that to the loop knot. So when I'm fishing over mush and tightly baited particles and crap like that, that literally is how long my hook length will be. When I'm fishing for what I would say average size, 15 to 35 pound carp, my hook length will generally be about that long. The only time I ever use a longer hook length is when I'm fishing for bigger fish, say at Nash's Church Lake. I tend to use it probably where it's that, I'd have a longer hook length, so that would be where the loop is. So it just gives it a little bit, but it's stiff, it just allows a little bit more play for the carp to tilt itself up. But my average length hook length, and I'll show you, is about that long.
And when you said because of bigger fish you go longer, is that just on the basis
of the size of
far away apart?
No, it's just the size.
Because they can suck further.
They've got deeper bodies, and they do need a bit more. You watch them in the edge, and sometimes short hooks ever go, and they just get bait in the mouth. So I prefer a slightly. But for the majority of my fishing, I would say 95% of my fishing, my hook length will be. Right, it's about percentages. So I've tied my bait, I've tied it up at home, it's stiff. I've got a balancing pot. I'm pretty anal in that, even though I know that works, I can't chuck it out without making sure. So I will check it in the balancing pot that sits like that. And I can't understand why people go in the edge. Just take yourself a little tub or something and just try it in the edge like that. So I've got that there. Just one second, I just need a quick.
How much coffee you've got?
Go for a quick line.
DNA base.
Yeah, where's that rig box, Sean? Anyone want a rig? £2.
Okay, so we've got that exactly as we want to fish it. It's about percentages. If you notice this, I have a little tub here of shots and bits of silicon. I have that bit of silicon, that's Nash 1 millimeter silicon. First thing I do is just push that down the hook length. Well, I didn't want to use that, I'd have been looking under there for an hour for that. That just goes down the hook length like that. Okay, Okay, that is purely and simply for this, right? The first thing I do is that's the big loop swivel there. That goes through. All I'm doing is tying what I would call a loop, a loop knot or whatever you want to call it. Just a loop, and I tie that. One, two, three, four. Just a grinner knot, yeah. Four turn grinner, okay? Don't pull it too tight to start with. Make sure, I always like a loop there, because that loop will sit properly. Get that, pull that tight. Oops, that's how good your leads are. So we'll find that leg. As a Yorkshireman in there, get them for free, but I don't lose them. Yeah. Okay.
The Scotsman does.
So I've tied. That's a four-turn grinner. Get some super glue or rig glue, or whatever you want to call it. Okay. All I do is add a little bit of rig glue to that there. Like that. It's always more difficult to do it when you're trying to do it like this rather than stood up or whatever. I get my scissors, I trim off.
No Blue Peter video without super glue.
I know, yeah. Okay, just trim it off.
Do you ever use quick links,
Jules? No, never use quick links. Never use quick links. And then just slide that over there, over the top of that, to sheath the knot. Literally, that's all I do. Okay? So you sheath your knot there. Believe you me, it is possible if you leave that tag end for it just to catch. Not very often, but it might just catch. And for the sake of a bit of a silicone, that's all you're doing is taking the percentages out each time. Put the lead back on there. Okay, that, and believe you me, I've caught carp to just under 50 pounds. That grinner knot will not move. It will not slip or anything like that. That will, all that can do is tighten up on itself. It will never ever break. I promise you that if you use the right materials. Okay, so you've there got. What did that happen? You have got that's, and that's how that sits like that. The thing with that is you've got a double loop there, so it's protecting your lead against them. When you cast out, that will literally spin round like that, and it will never ever tangle. Right. As it hits the bottom, and I always have foam, and I'll show you how it works. All that does is that will always hit the bottom like that, and it will always kick out like that. It kicks out on the bottom like that, and it just sits absolutely beautiful. And that, whatever way the carp comes, it just gives it that little bit of movement, then it pricks itself against. It's like a bit of a bungee rig. It's that a little bit of movement, then it'll prick itself against it. And that is a simple, that you don't need to put putty on it, stuff like that. All that, if you put putty on that, do you think that putty will nail it down? It doesn't. You don't need putty, that will sink anyway. If you get a slight bend in it, just use your fingers just to get a bit of generator, a bit of heat, because you can always, and that will just make it straighter again. But that is what you want, is you want the point between the lead and the hook point to, you want that to be a straight line. That hook sits like that. And whatever way that carp comes, that is always in a position to hook itself. And it sits like that at the bottom. You drop in that edge, and it sits like that. And that is as simple as that. You can fish it. If it's a clear bottom, you can fish it with an inline set. It's up to you. But I use it like that. And I don't feel that I need to have those cog systems and stuff like that. I think sometimes you're making it more complicated than it needs to be. So that's how that sits.
And always use a flat pair lead.
Always use a flat pair lead. I like how it sits. The last bit of this as well is the foam, and it's all about the percentages. Now, first thing, when people see this foam, they think, "All right, yeah, it's trying to be trendy, camoing everything up." The reason is not like that. If any of you have got
the sun getting,
yeah, stop the sun getting into it. If people have got bags of PVA foam that are crushed, it's called PVA foam. It's not actually PVA foam. It's actually wheat germ nuggets. It's not PVA at all. But we call it PVA foam. It's just nuggets, really. The thing with these is they are only as good as their buoyancy. That is very good. But once these get crushed together and get sunlight and it gets like that, and they do get, and probably some of you have got the stuff, think, "Oh, I've got my foam." That is about fuck all good, to be honest. That is that is absolutely that is no good whatsoever. And all that stuff
in the green.
Yeah, you can take that one. Yeah, that is no good whatsoever.
if I left all that in a plastic bag outside, it's amazing it just tightens up because sunlight's on it. And if you leave it unsealed, things with this is it's so easy even when you're out there just to put the top on it like that, you don't get any rain on it, and that, whatever tape you cover, it just stops it getting damaged.
Now, but the camo is carpy,
Joe. The camo's carpy, yeah. Yeah, it's nearest to getting to carpy. The reason I use different colour foam as well is that you'll see this when you cast out. If you're fishing beyond 50 or 60 yards, if you fish two pieces of the same coloured foam and it pops off, you don't know whether one piece has come off or two pieces. But by having two different colour foam, you know whether both bits of foam have come off. And I also prefer colours because white sometimes look like a feather of a bird, so I always prefer coloured foam. The best foam is the Solent Gardener colour one, and the Castaway one. Some of the people, they spend £300-400 on a rod and they say, God, I got a bag of foam that came with me LCD TV. I say, have you tested it? Oh no, it's the same. Jesus, some of it does not dissolve. When people use foam, most people use PVA foam like this. They get that like that, they put it on there, they lick it, they squeeze it round like that, and they go, all right, that's it. Now that is absolutely a bag of shite. Right, that is of no good whatsoever. I could guarantee when you cast out, that'll never ever tangle. But if you're worried about that, just put one of those hook protectors on it. You'll never get. What happens is that's like that is like bread. Anybody of you fish years ago? It's like bread flake, and it forms a sticky mess. There's no buoyance in it, so it sits on the bottom like that. Even unless it's really warm, all you end up with is a big load of gunge on your hook point, and that hook point is the most safe carp rig ever, because that hook point is covered in crap. That is of no use whatsoever. There's no buoyancy in it. You're not going to hook any carp on it. The thing is, eventually when you wind it in and wind it in, that'll pull off in the weed. You'll wind it and you'll never even know. Believe you me, that is a waste of time. So if you put your stuff on like, oh, bloody hell, I'll have to cut that off.
It's not the inflator.
Yeah, yeah. The Scottish one.
Who am I taking?
Right. The way to
put five boilies up.
the way to use PVA foam is dead or PVA nuggets. Is put it through like that to start with. Okay, so you've hooked your hook on like that, okay? Now get your other coloured foam, whatever colour you want to use, blue, purple, orange, whatever you want to do. Lick the end of each of it.
You look like a carp.
And squeeze the ends, only the ends only, right, the ends only. Okay? What that means is when it hits the bottom, you've got super buoyancy. Okay, what you've got there is you've got a hole in the middle. I'm not bothered about that PVA foam dissolving. I couldn't give a toss about it dissolving. All I want is it to come off. If you've got a hole in the middle, what happens is water will find a way in and it pops it off. And what happens is it will always be the one that's on the back of you. So the first thing that will pop off, I guarantee you, every time will be the purple one, because that's on the back of the hook. What happens is that the water gets up the middle, it forces a purple one off. As soon as the purple one comes off, literally 20 seconds later, the green one will pop off, and that hook will just go like that, will kick itself out to full extension, and it will sit like that on the bottom. Perfect. And it's absolutely perfect. I will always, always wait till two bits of foam have come off. If two bits of foam don't come off, I'll wind it in, no matter how good the cast is.
And redo it.
It's that percentage game. You've got 2-3 grand of rods and reels sat out there, and you are not winding it in for the sake of one bit of PVA foam. And it's like, you've got to get all your percentages right. So I wait till two bits of foam have come off, and if two bits of foam don't come off, or I'm not convinced they've come off, I'll wind it in again. Generally, they'll come off within about 10 seconds at this time of year. If the harder you squeeze it, the longer it takes. You just got to use a bit of common sense. The good thing as well is it shows you exactly where your hook bait is. And the number of times I've cast out and I thought, that is spot on, put the rod down, got my bag of boilies ready, and it's popped up. I thought, oh god, I wasn't as good with that cast. So it actually teaches you when you need to overcast, undercast, because that foam will come up in a straight line. Clearly, if you've got a massive undertow, you might get some movement, but generally in most waters, where that foam comes off is exactly where your hook bait is. So generally I've got my pile of boilies or whatever next to me on my spom rod, and as soon as that foam comes off, I spom on top of it, because you know exactly where it is, and it's great to bait up against. But you know, it's just these little edges that make a massive difference.
What would you fish that over, like a spready boilie?
I fish that over mush, I'd fish it as a single bait at range, I'd fish it over boilies, I'd fish it over... If I was fishing here tonight, there would be three rods on that. Two might be on white pop-ups and one would be on the key, but that is my that is my 100% kickoff pun. That is my 100% starting point rig. Now, there's absolutely nothing there that I've done that none of you can't do. But I tell you what, every single little thing is a percentage getting right. So every single thing from the fluorocarbon to the lead clip to that... to that, there are probably about 15 things in that equation that give you an advantage over the bloke next door, because most carp anglers are naturally lazy. They naturally say to themselves,
that'll do.
Right, the best thing you can do is have people on a lake who go, that'll do. The last thing you want are people who care. So if somebody comes along and does all that, whether he's doing all that or I'm doing all that, I've got
Four and a half miles, 4.5 hours, I care.
Yeah, so you care. But believe you me,
you're the only one who's caught.
Yeah. People will say, just any old pop-up will do. I never need to check. I will go. Because I have so little time, I have to do so much work in advance. So that's an airball pop-up. I'll know how much buoyancy that is in 12 hours' time in comparison. I know that will still be on. So it's all the work you do beforehand makes you a better angler. There's nothing there that any of you can't do, and every single little thing is I've learned. Nothing there really is what people have showed me. That's everything there. You are learning from the blank days, weeks, hours I've suffered on. Same as I learned from, you know, Andy Little would have had loads of blanks, but when I've come and copied him, I've saved myself. But you know, it's a progression, isn't it? Everything you read saves you having to dumb.
You say, like, the rig ring was better than. Like bait
for absolutely that
is
to
that
me
for speed or just for
no like I just
movement.
Movement. I just think all the right. Movement as well, and I don't want to be pissing about with bait floss and tying loops and stuff like that. That just, it's just more movement, it allows it to spin. But the more angles there are for the carp to deal with, the more it can trip itself up. So your average multi rig, which I showed, is there. All I'm doing is adding a little bit of tubing to create more of a it's you know, it's not that will catch carp straight away, but just adding that little bit of tubing to create another bit of an angle trips the carp up. Now some people will say, just bung it out in the middle and that'll do, carp aren't that clever. Well, I am not that way. I cannot sit there, chuck them out and hope for the best. If I do all that and that does not go up, when I drive away from a lake, if I've blanked or caught, that's not the major thing for me. I know whether I have tried my hardest. If I've tried my hardest and blanked because I'm not on the fish, I can live with that. But if I've gone and spent 24 hours fishing and I think, you lazy bastard, Julian, you were tweeting or reading a magazine, you were chatting to your mates, I can't live with that because I've wasted 24 hours of my very precious life. You know, I can't see the point in spending $3,000 on tackle and then tweeting or reading a book.
I just stick to porn, 2 seconds and I'm back.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's all about care enough. Motivation to care enough is the best thing. You know, there are some people will look at that and they'll go, you just don't need to do all that. You just need to do X, Y, and Z. Now, that's great, because the guy that thinks that, he ain't got an advantage over the guy that goes, you know what, actually, there is something on that PVA foam. I actually might get rid of that bag of crap foam that's in my bag, go and buy some solar foam tomorrow, get myself a box so it's not crapped up, put the lid on it, stuff like that. That, you know, that's the difference between Terry Earn and all those. They make it sound easy because they take all this for granted. But if you actually looked at the way Terry Earn fishes, what you think is just normal, he will go to infinite lengths to make sure it's right. He can't get across because he's not a technical writer. But believe you me, every single little bit of his setup, nobody catches more carp by being lethargic and lazy. Yeah.
If the attention they do, to detail.
Attention to detail. It's percentages, you know. And if you are not on the fish, you can fish like this and not catch anything. But there will come a time when you're on fish, and that day you will catch 7 fish rather than 3 fish. And it's a, you know, I've said this before, it's a law of averages. There will be time after time after time I cannot get on the fish. Can't do anything about that. But the time that I'm on them, I want to multiply. I want to catch a fish, right? As soon as that carp's in the net, I don't want to be pissing about tying a rig up. As soon as that carp's in the net, I cut that rig off. One of those goes back on again. That bait's on its head. Set it all up. Then I'll take the pictures. It's, you know, that's why I take two landing nets. You know, there are red letter days, and you can have red letter days, but they won't be red letter days if you only catch one carp. It's a matter of multiplying your chances. And honestly, it's that simple. It is that simple. Carp fishing is not hard. It's just a matter of, you know, getting your priorities right. What is matter to you? All these edges rolled into one that become a massive advantage. So that's about it. I don't know if that's been useful or not.
Julian, that's been absolutely fantastic. Listen, we're going to take a break. There's 100 and something people watching this live. There's people saying stuff like, look at this man's passion. I've never seen somebody so passionate.
Yeah.
Sat here and explained what he does. So, guys, thank you to Julian. We're going to come back in a minute after some food and some more beers to sober me up. And we're going to do a live Q&A. So, guys who are watching, all 100 and something of you, thank you very much. And Julian,
thanks,
give this
a
man a round of applause. Yeah,
brilliant. Cheers, thank you very much.
Cool. That's fantastic. Carpcast Extra.